The title of this message is False Signs of the End, a Spiritual Threat. So let's go. Going forward, what threats do we face that will keep us out of God's fabulous kingdom, out of being baby gods, helping to turn this world into a paradise? So what threats do we face going forward? Let's go to Matthew 24 and get the answer from Jesus Christ himself, one of the threats we face going forward. Matthew 24, verse 23 and 24. So Matthew 24, 23 reads, "Now this is an answer to the question, what are the signs of your coming?" And Christ talked about deception. Then in verse 23, Christ tells the disciples, "If any man shall say unto you, lo, here is Christ," and the word Christ means Messiah, you know, here's the Messiah, "or there, believe it not, for there shall arise false Christs and false prophets, and they shall show great signs." And I want to emphasize the word great. Great signs and wonders, insomuch that if it were possible, they shall deceive the very elect. So let's look at the false signs. And hopefully we, because we stay up on the things we should stay up on and close to Christ, will be the very elect. But Christ would not have mentioned this if it were not a serious threat. So how do you resist the false signs, the false miracles, the false apostles? Let's face it, people love miracles. People love signs. People love special things. People love heroes, charismatic leaders, and certainly pushed by the media. You know, the media can turn someone from an unknown into a media star fairly quickly. So you think of what the media could do for the false prophet and the future dictator of the world. And it is a threat to us. Now, all of us, we know better than to worship a man. But it might happen with such power and impact that even though we know better than to worship a man, and most Christians do, a vast majority of the world will get sucked into worshiping a man. And when you say it now, you think, well, it will never happen. But then you look at things that have happened in the past and you think, well, who knows? If someone would have told you a great nation like Germany would have been worshiping Adolf Hitler, you would have thought, no, they're too intelligent. And much of also Central Europe. By the way, you might have seen it in the newsletter or on the internet. Neo-Nazi parties made major gains in Germany and in Greece as there's kind of a backlash against austerity measures in Europe. And so I'm mentioning these things to make a point that worshiping a man is possible. I'm not going to turn to Luke 4:6, but the devil told Christ that if Christ would worship him, he would give him power. Christ didn't deny the devil had the wherewithal to give great power to a man. Christ didn't say he couldn't do it. Also in Deuteronomy 4:2, it says that we should never alter the Bible, add to or take away from the Bible. And in Galatians 1:8, Paul says they should reject any new gospel different than the one he preached, no matter even if it came from people who appear to be angels. I'm saying all that to say, if there is a standard by which you can judge a false prophet, it's the Bible. It's the Bible. It's the Bible. The Bible is the measuring stick. So let's follow on in Matthew 24, verse 25. Matthew 24, verse 25. "Behold, I've told you before, wherefore, if they shall say unto you, behold, he's in the desert." Hey, there's a Messiah out there in Arizona somewhere. You got to go see him in the Flagstaff, Arizona, in some cave or something like that. By the way, things like that have appeared on the internet before. Weird things like that. "Behold, he's in the desert. Go not forth. Behold, he's in a secret chamber. Believe it not." Now, the return of Christ is going to be unmistakable if you know the Bible. You cannot be fooled. But there will be groups, and there will be a lot of pressure to believe in this great leader. And I can see people saying, well, we want Christian unity. We want the whole world unified behind one leader. This man is it. If he's telling you to do things like worship him instead of Jesus Christ, or that he is Christ and he's sitting in a temple or some office somewhere, The Bible tells us not to do it. But there'll be a lot of pressure to get in line with the new world leader. Notice what it says. For as lightning comes out of the east and shines even into the west, so shall also the coming of the Son of Man be. In other words, just like lightning or the sun coming out from the east to the west, you can't miss it. It's not like when Christ comes back the second time, he's not going to be in a secret chamber. He's not going to sneak up anybody. It's going to be like in your face. For soever where the carcass is, there will the eagles be gathered together. Just like over a dead carcass, you see all those vultures and eagles circling. Well, that's a terrible analogy, but that's how it will be. All of us will be resurrected into the air to meet Christ. As he circles the earth, you know, his true disciples will be resurrected to meet him. So you won't have to worry about coming to Christ. The Holy Spirit will bring us to Christ when he comes back. There's no secret meeting or anything like that. If you know the Bible, you'll know that. Let's go to 2 Thessalonians. If you know the Bible, you'll also know this warning. And this is in 2 Thessalonians. And this warning is known by people, but somehow they're going to forget this warning. 2 Thessalonians 2. And Paul is warning them about false things, making them think that Christ in the end is coming. And in his warning, he says, that you be not soon shaken in mind or be troubled, neither by spirit, nor by word, nor by letter. So there must have been false prophets, even in Paul's day, circulating false letters about the Messiah is coming, he's in a secret place, he's coming tomorrow. As from us, as if the day of Christ is at hand. Let no man deceive you by any means, for that day shall not come, except there come a falling away first, a great apostasy. I've actually thought about that. Let me just give you a thought, and this is just an opinion. The fall of the worldwide Church of God is certainly part of it, and that's a big part of it, but that may only be step one. Maybe a bigger step could be the fall of most of the world's believers into things that they shouldn't believe in. In other words, the way this is written, it implies a significant falling away. Not just big falling away. Anyway, we'll see as time goes on exactly how big the falling away is. A falling away first, and that man of sin be revealed, the son of perdition, who opposes and exalts himself, verse 4, above all that is called God. In other words, he's going to put himself in place of God. By the word antichrist means in place of Christ when you go through the original Greek translation. Above all that's called God or that is worshipped, so that he, as God, sits in the temple of God, showing himself, not that God believes it, but showing himself that he is God. Now, you might remember Antiochus Epiphanes, just a small model, an evil emperor that tried to kill the Jews and took over their temple, slaughtered a pig, put a false statue in there, and tried to get people to worship him as God. He really was not a great man, actually, that word. Anyway, he was a bad little guy. And the point I'm getting at is, though, that is going to happen again. Someday there's got to be some temple in Jerusalem of some sort, however the details work themselves out. And this man is going to get such charismatic power that when they probably put him on national television, on the internet, sitting on a golden throne in the temple of God, which is probably going to be, you know, the Temple Mount in Jerusalem, and probably with all kind of lights, people are going to say, there he is. He's the Messiah, our true leader. He's God. Let's worship him. By the way, you know, in the old days of the empire, they actually worshiped Caesar. Hail Caesar was meant in a worshipful sense. It's like Hail Hitler. They worshiped their emperors, and they acted like gods. And I think some of them actually got so carried away, they started to believe they were gods. We're not men, we're gods. Well, as pagan as that sounds, it's coming back one more time. Verse 10, and with all deceivableness of unrighteousness in them that perish, because they receive not the love of the truth. Why can the world be deceived? Because the world doesn't love the truth. And sometimes when you get around, we've been dealing with funeral problems and certain relatives, and and you hear people rattle off stuff that is weird stuff that's not obviously true, and you tell them the truth, and well, I don't want to hear all that stuff. It's like nobody cares about the truth anymore. They just want to believe what they want to believe. And I'm not talking about religion only. It has to do with all kinds of subjects, all kinds of things. I told a young man, I said, well, they've aborted about 50 million babies. He didn't want to believe it because he's kind of in the, what's the term for it? I guess we would call it the religious left or the, anyway, the term is kind of the politically correct religious left, and they don't want to believe that many babies have been aborted. And they say, oh, abortion's not that bad, and anyway, I'm going to go into it now. But it's like those facts are fairly well known. It's not like I made that figure up. It's pretty close and growing every year. They don't want to believe it. And the point I'm getting at is people do not love the truth, and the media is quite fond of pushing half-truths, lies, and distortions, and people love it. I think they turn to certain networks because they know they'll hear only what they want to hear. My opinion. Receive not the love of the truth, that they might be saved. For this cause, God shall send them strong delusion. Let's emphasize the word strong. In other words, it's not just the typical. Actually, I had a list of false messiahs, and I started to read them off, but I decided not to because really they're not that strong. None of you are going to fall for Sun Young Moon. Actually, there are a bunch of others who are less well-known, and they're down there saying they're Christ, and they got a few followers. But this is going to be greater than those guys. This is going to be strong delusion, and it's coming in the future. that they shall send them strong delusion, that they should believe a lie, and that they all might be damned who believe not the truth, but have pleasure in unrighteousness. And the world is going to suffer some horrible things in the way of plagues in the very end. Hopefully we'll be protected from all that because they believe a lie. Now, I'm not saying that God won't save most of them later on, but here's what I predict is going to happen. The world is going to hit a political, financial crisis. And it's going to be a big crisis. And out of that crisis will come a religious and political leader to save the day, like a hero on a white horse. And you probably know, most of you probably realize, that the European financial crisis is not over. France voted a socialist government that said, we're not going to cooperate with Germany and the austerity programs to end our overspending. And Greek thing is more of a confusion. The parties are against austerity, but they're not quite sure who's in charge. A 4 or 5, it's kind of a split thing. The Nazis are in one group and a bunch of others, but the general direction is, now I'm quoting USA Today. They said European voters basically sent this message, austerity is a bad word. We're going to be financially irresponsible. I mean, that's kind of what the European, and that means greater crisis at some later point. And America is still spending, we're borrowing 40 cents of every dollar the federal government spends, and there's no agreement. Senate hasn't passed a budget in almost 4 years, so they're going to basically keep spending. Anyway, can you see a financial crisis coming when borrowers say, wait a minute, it's already starting to happen in Europe, and we don't know how the European battle will go back and forth between Germany, France, and other forces in Europe. And it could hang around for a few years, but I foresee it's sort of like if someone borrows and borrows and borrows and borrows and spends wild and irresponsible, at some point it's going to collapse like a house of cards, isn't it? But also other things could happen, natural calamities where there's, you know, like we put all our excess corn into ethanol. We think that's smart. But what if we have like 2 years in a row without any excess corn production? Then we don't have the corn's a big component in most of our foods, like cereals and drinks. And you just look at labels, you'll see what I mean. Who is to, and they feed it also to livestock. Who is to say we're going to have some tight food supplies? And then you have all these other crises coming. Can you see a potential crisis coming? I'm not saying I know when or the details, because, you know, that would be getting the big head. You know, nobody really knows for sure. But I foresee a crisis coming. And in a crisis, people do things they normally wouldn't do. And I think the election of Hitler is the big proof. You know, until Germany got in the Great Recession, and they had it worse than anybody because of the Versailles Treaty, the Nazi Party only got like 3%. All of a sudden, when the crisis hit, a lot of voters, they became one of the leading parties in Germany, in the Bundestag. And by the way, the neo-Nazi party, they got a chunk of votes in Germany. They quoted that statement, how all of a sudden the Nazi party went from little to big. It's called the Pirate Party in Germany. And the very fact that they would quote that, they can't call themselves Nazi because it's illegal to be the National Socialist Party in Germany. But I think America pushed that on them after the war. But I think they're sending a subtle message to the German people. We're here, or some variation of it is here. Anyway, I guess we'll see. I really don't know about the political side of it. And we may have some real surprises there. But a replacement for Christ is coming. The world, for the most part, will be deceived. And one man put it this way. He says, when this happens, will you believe your eyes or will you believe the Bible? He said, will you believe your eyes or will you believe the Bible? Because this man of sin is going to look charismatic. And they are going to perform some miracles. I mean, real miracles. I know there's sleight of hand tricks by Benny Hinn, who some people list as a false prophet. But you all know the Benny Hinn stuff is not that impressive. Anybody impressed with Benny Hinn's people falling over backwards? I don't think so. This is going to be a lot more than those kind of things. Remember, when Christ met the devil in the wilderness, and the devil said, I can give you all kinds of power and whatever all the devil showed him, Christ's defense was the Bible. Christ said, it is written. It is written. He quoted two Bible scriptures. Christ used the Bible as a defense against the devil. When we face pressures to fall in line with the great false prophet, we need to use this book, the Holy Bible, as our defense. It is written, you shall not worship man, but God only. This man will have charisma that will be hard to resist. So it's the Bible and the Bible only. All of us will be in the resurrection. It'll be like lightning when Christ comes back. Let's go back to Matthew 24. There's one more part of this that I want to emphasize just a little bit. Matthew 24. And I think we left off at verse 29. Verse 29. Matthew 24:29. Immediately after the tribulation of those days, because there's going to be a lot of trouble in those days, shall the sun be darkened, and the moon shall not give her light, and the stars shall fall from heaven, and the powers of heaven shall be shaken. I don't know if that really means the universe will change. Maybe it does, maybe it doesn't. Maybe it just looks that way from Earth's perspective. God changing the atmosphere, and they say the moon looking like a red, bleeding. There are ways that God could do that. But it doesn't really matter how God does it. You know, that's kind of irrelevant. God, of course, can do anything he wants. But in other words, these are signs that no one can fake. That's the point I'm getting at. These are signs that cannot be faked. And the powers of heaven shall be shaken. And then shall appear the sign of the Son of Man in heaven. And then shall all the tribes of the earth mourn. And they shall see the Son of Man coming in the clouds of heaven with power and with great glory. In other words, they're going to see him coming. They're going to mourn. The world is not going to welcome the true Jesus Christ. I've often wondered about that, and I can't fully explain it. How can great armies of the world fight God? I mean, why would they do that? I heard one man say this. Now, this is one man's opinion. I'm just going to mention it, not that it's doctrine. He says that there are a lot of TV shows pushing talking to the dead. He says, what if there are a lot of apparitions of, say, someone that people really love, like Mary, coming back, and, you know, the real, you can really see it, some apparition that people can see and talk to, and maybe other influential people that have passed away, and they will tell people what the false prophet wants them to hear. And they're going to be thinking about it. Well, I saw this apparition, and it told me to worship the beast, whatever his true name is. I think it's going to spell 666 either in Latin or Greek, but whoever he is. And he shall send his angels with a great sound of a trumpet. By the way, every Feast of Trumpets, which will come in the fall, we celebrate Christ coming as a trumpet call, just like a bugler saying, charge to his cavalry. Christ is going to come back and take over this world by force, and we will join him in the air. And they shall gather together his elect from the four winds, from one end of heaven to the other. So we don't have to worry about secretly finding Christ. He'll gather us when the time comes. It'll be one great giant trumpet blast. But God does have something to say. I mean, Christ has something to say, warning us about all this. Verse 42, here's what Christ says. Watch therefore, for you know not what hour the Lord does come. The implication there is there's going to be some surprises. I don't know what the surprise is going to be. If we knew, it wouldn't be a surprise. It could be that evil things will happen. Then we'll kind of get used to them. And then many of us will spiritually slip. And then Christ will come. But however it works out, there are going to be some surprises catching some of us off guard. But know this, that if the good man, so he says he's, you know, a Christian of the house, had known in what watch the thief would come, he would have watched and he would not have allowed his house to be broken up. Therefore, be you also ready, for in such an hour as you think not, the Son of Man comes. In other words, he's saying, I'm going to surprise people. You better be ready all the time. So here's what I recommend. Get into what I call a spiritual groove, a spiritual habit. You know, like you wear out a groove going round and round the house, a little groove. You get a spiritual habit or groove. Keep growing in love and repentance. Come to church regularly and to the holy days regularly. Pray, and most of all, learn the Bible, the Bible, the Bible. And learn it and read it every day. Get it in your mind. Keep it familiar on a regular basis. And if you have that habit, even if you're surprised when Christ comes, you'll be ready. And you'll be undeceivable. Verse 48, but if that evil servant shall say in his heart, my Lord delays his coming. It's going to be way off, 10 years away. And he shall begin to smite his fellow servant, eat and drink with the drunken. And the Lord of that servant shall come in a day when he doesn't look for him. And in that hour, for an hour he is not aware of. And then he says he'll be cast asunder. So some people God will allow to be deceived. Why? Because they have started to go over to the dark side. Because they think God delayed his coming. I can get ready later. That's going to be a mistake. So I can get ready later. Christ says, stay ready, stay ready, stay ready. Let's go to Luke 6:26. Luke 6:26. Woe unto you when all men shall speak well of you, for so did their fathers to the false prophets. In other words, who does the world praise? The false prophets. If you really look at Jeremiah, Isaiah, Ezekiel, and many of the prophets, there were some good kings that did praise them. But for the most part, and there's plenty of Bible scriptures, including what Stephen said, for the most part, the leadership, including religious and political, rejected the true prophets of God. But the false prophets were praised. So who do you think the media is going to support? The false prophets. I've just been amazed at how much media, false media there is in America. And I believe at least one of the roles of the false prophet, to lead people away from God, and from the Bible, and from truth, is being played out by our media and Hollywood, which kind of supports it, because much of the media material is made in Hollywood. And they really do support it. A lady called in one talk show and said, well, the Constitution says there has to be separation of church and state. That's not in the Constitution. No, Jefferson wrote that. And he wrote it to protect the Baptists from the government. This lady didn't know it. I mean, literally, she'd been miseducated, and the media reinforces it, so people think it's true. I'm not saying that we want the state meddling in our churches or churches running the state. But all the Constitution said was Congress should not, set an official religion for America. You know, and people should have complete religious freedom. And that's a wonderful thing. And they learned that from all the mess they saw in Europe. Tyndale's persecution and others. The founding fathers were very wise in putting that in there. But the media has distorted that, and they're miseducating, misinforming, misleading the public more and more every year. So know that evil spirits are very tricky, and they're going to perform some tricky miracles. Now, I want to tell you a stupid story, but maybe it'll make a point. These Mr. Doofus and his cousin were going ice fishing. They got a brand new pickup truck and a really good retriever dog. And so they went out to the middle of this lake, and it was frozen. You got to have some open water for the ducks to come down. So they said, well, we got a stick of dynamite with a 40-second fuse. But they thought, well, if we put this dynamite on the ice, we won't be able to get back, you know, in safety in time. They said, what we'll do is we'll light the fuse and we'll throw the dynamite. And they threw it way out there. Unfortunately, the retriever dog was well trained. He ran out there, grabbed the dynamite in his mouth, started running back to them. Stop, 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 stop. They yelled, but the dog kept running and the fuse getting shorter and shorter. They took out the shotgun and they shot the dog. Well, you know, buckshot didn't kill a dog that size. Just kind of stunned the dog. What? The dog was stunned. He didn't know what to think. So the dog ran for cover. The only cover on the frozen lake was the underside of the new pickup truck, which went boom. A little gasoline to add to the explosion. And the truck sank. Big, giant hole in the middle of the ice. Mr. Doofus, they escaped. But would you believe the insurance company wouldn't pay for it? They claim illegal use of dynamite for fishing is not covered. And they hadn't even made one of their new $500 payments. Now, the point of that terrible story is people can sometimes make dumb decisions and dumb mistakes. There's a new book out. Apparently, they claim it's been in the Vatican for 500 years. I'm just saying what they said. It's called Petrus Romanus. Supposedly, this book has predicted all the popes, and it says there's one more pope to come, the last pope, Petrus Romanus, and he is going to lead the Catholics into apostasy. I mean, and it's in the Vatican. It's being released now. A lot of people are trying to get the book. I'm just saying what the internet says. It's an interesting thought, whether it's true or not. I guess we can never know that, whether they forged it. But many Catholics are expecting apostasy. Isn't that interesting? I just think that's an interesting thought that's coming. Let's go to 2 Thessalonians 2:15. So a lot of people are looking for something that may be coming. Thessalonians 2:15 reads, therefore, brethren, stand fast. That's the word I'm emphasizing. Stand fast and hold the traditions which you've been taught, whether by word or our epistles. Why did Paul say that? Because forces were coming to change the doctrines and pull people away from the truth. And what our only defense against spectacular miracles and signs will be the Bible, the truth, the Bible, the truth, the Bible, the Bible, the Bible. I believe the new one coming, false prophet and the beast, will have a lot of charisma. And the media will build that up. Let's go to Revelation 13. See a little bit about them. They're going to have a lot of charisma. And the media, of course, will emphasize that charisma. And people do look for heroes. They really do. Revelation 13, we'll pick it up in verse 11. Remember, people love heroes. They love miracles, visions, signs. Maybe a bright light will shine on the guy. He'll glow. And he'll have some music in the background. I'm just trying to picture how the media might picture it. And maybe, you know, and the devil will be able to perform some real miracles. Not fake, but I mean real miracles. And I beheld another beast coming up out of the earth. He had two horns like a lamb. In other words, he's going to look and pretend like a lamb like Christ. You know, Christ is the Lamb of God. He's going to be a lamb. But actually, he's a wolf inside lamb's skin. He's going to support an evil dictatorship. But to the world, he's going to look like a lamb. That's the point. And he spake as a dragon. In other words, what he teaches is from the devil, but he looks like a lamb. And he exercises all the power of the first beast before him and causes the earth and them which dwell therein to worship the first beast, whose deadly wound was healed. We think that this dictator will have maybe been shot and somehow make a miraculous healing or something that will give him even more credibility in the public and in the media. Whatever that deadly wound is, we'll find out. And he doeth great wonders. And I want to emphasize the word great wonders. It's not minor stuff, but great wonders. So that he makes fire come down from heaven on earth in the sight of men. Now, you might remember who did that. Elijah did that, right? This guy's going to do what Elijah did. I can see him saying, I'm another, you know, Elijah did it. I'm another Elijah, and the guy of support is the Messiah. And he calls down, and literally fire comes down from heaven and burns up whatever the offering was, just like Elijah did it. And they're going to put it on probably international television, on the web, and the world's going to be so impressed. And he deceives them that dwell on the earth. That implies big, big, big deception. Billions of people. By the means of those miracles which he had the power to do in the sight of the beast, saying to them that dwell on the earth that they should make an image to the beast which had the wound by a sword and did live. And he had power to give life unto the image of the beast. I don't actually know what that means, but I think it means statues of the beast will start talking. By the way, do you know there are parts of the world where they love to bow down to statues? I mean, they really do. I'm not going to mention certain parts of the world. I'm going to offend people, but there are a lot of places in the world where statues are still big. Now, most of us know better than to worship a statue, right? I can see when this all happens, people will be bowing down to statues of the beast. Maybe his picture will be on credit cards and on the money. That could be the mark of the beast. People will, you know, kiss and worship his picture on the credit card and certainly worship his image. And maybe certain statues of his will speak and they'll say, that wasn't fake. And maybe it won't be fake. Maybe the devil will be given the opportunity to make the statue talk or bleed and talk. We'll see. But it's going to be impressive, whatever it is, whatever this is. The image of the beast, that the image of the beast should both speak and cause it as many as would not worship them and the beast should be killed. In other words, if you don't fall in line, they're going to persecute you. Hopefully we'll be in a place of safety then, but some people will be martyred, as you well know, at that point. And verse 16, he shall call all. And that word all is pretty inclusive. Both small and great, rich and poor, free and bond, to receive the mark in their right hand or in their forehead. And we assume they'll control much of the world's trade, and a vast number of people, small and great, will be deceived. Let's go to Revelation 16, 15. I meant to say Revelation 16, 15. Revelation 16, 15. Christ says, behold, I come as a thief. Now, the thief always surprises you. Blessed is he that watches and keeps his garment, lest he walk naked and they see his shame. In other words, blessed will be the people that stay godly all the time. So even when a thief comes, you're going to be ready. So what is Christ saying? He says, get yourself a spiritual groove and stay in the groove. Stay in the spiritual habit. Stay in the groove. Good habits will keep us from being caught off guard. So I would say, come to services regularly. Study your Bible regularly. Get in a godly groove and stay there on a regular basis. In the Sermon on the Mount, actually, it doesn't end in Matthew 24. It goes to Matthew 25. I want to just summarize Matthew 25, just real briefly, as we finish up this message. I want to just summarize Matthew 25 briefly. Most of you know it well, but I want to summarize it anyway, because it's part of the warning that Christ gave. Matthew 25, this is the 10 virgins. I'm going to pick it up, Matthew 25, verse 7 and 8. Verse 7, then all those virgins arose and trimmed their lamps, because, you know, it says the Messiah is coming, And the foolish said unto the wise, give us of your oil, for our lamps are gone out. In other words, our spiritual light died some years back because we didn't keep it going. But the wise answered, saying, not so, lest there not be enough for us. You have to do it for yourself. Go buy and sell for yourself. In other words, it's an individual thing. Each person individually has to do it. In other words, that analogy says, don't run out of spiritual fuel. Do not run out of spiritual fuel because maybe the end seems a little longer than you thought. It's taking a little longer for Christ to get back. And how do we not run out of spiritual fuel? You have to renew your fuel on a daily basis. On a daily basis, get in some prayer and Bible study. On a weekly basis, come to Sabbath services. On an annual basis, come to the feast days. Make those good habits. Keep those good habits no matter what happens, even when things seem to be calm. Keep those good habits going. It's like putting in spiritual fuel in our tank. So if Christ comes back suddenly and catches everybody by surprise, you've got at least the minimum amount of fuel in your spiritual fuel tank that can get you ready for the return of Christ. Stay close to God, regardless of what you see in the world. Now, let me mention the other two analogies, analogies that are mentioned in Matthew 25. There is the talent. And the parable of the talent basically says, God expects some return on his investment in you. And everybody says, who, me? God hasn't given me anything, but maybe he has given you more spiritual understanding than you think. But whatever, that's between you and God. But the guy who hid his talent would not stand up for Christ, wouldn't do anything for God's work, just kind of hid. Christ wasn't happy with him. The ones who, with whatever amount of talent they gave, they contributed and helped out and grew. God gave them proportional power in the kingdom to come. So God doesn't expect you to take your spiritual talents and hide them under a blanket. He expects you to grow and use them and occasionally stand up for Christ when it's appropriate. And then the last one has to do with what you do for the least of these. And basically what it says in the latter part of Matthew 25, it says, Christ says, I don't know you because, you know, you didn't give me water and you didn't help me at all. And the guy says, well, what do you mean, Lord, that I didn't help you? He says, when you didn't help the least of these, you didn't help me. And when you help the least of these, then you help me. In other words, be willing to help people who can't do you any good. Somebody is rich and powerful or famous and popular or whatever, and you help them, it helps you, and you all help each other. Well, that's good, but that's not what he's referring to. Help somebody who can't return the favor. Help somebody who needs help when they really need it. In other words, be kind in a way that is not self-centered. In other words, I'll be kind if it benefits me personally. Like a lot of companies, it's good PR. They give where they get a lot of publicity, and they give where it will help their image and their name. And that's, I'm not putting that down, but you can see there's a selfish side of that, too. Christ says give even when you won't get any recognition. Give when they won't help you. And if you are cold-hearted toward people who really need help when you could have helped them, then Christ considers that as spiritually not being ready. So those are the warnings of Matthew 25. Renew your spiritual fuel. Use the talents God gave you. And be kind to those even who can't return the kindness. Because when you're kind to those, you're kind to God. And you'll see those in the latter part of Matthew 25. All of that was part of the warning and how to stay ready that Christ was giving. So what I'm saying is we must have good habits, a good groove, and stay in that groove and, you know, make that groove deeper and deeper. Stay close to God, regardless of what's happening in the world. There is a crisis coming. I think the devil is setting mankind up for deception. I don't know exactly how he's doing it. I have some ideas and theories. We can talk about them if you like at Bible study. But I know he's doing it. He's setting us up. He's setting the world up. And the devil is good at what he does. He's been studying human nature for, 6,000 years? And he may have known even things even before that. about the makeup of mankind. He's setting the world up for deception. It'll be powerful. Don't take it lightly. Stay close to Christ. And I can just imagine the pressure that will be on Christians. Well, everybody else is going along with this man. What's wrong with you? Why don't you do the things he wants you to do and you know, give some level of allegiance to this guy, all these other big-time leaders? What's wrong with you people? You know, you can see the pressure, can't you? And did you see him on television the other night? Oh, he looks so spiritual. Or whatever they do exactly. So and did you see that miracle when fire came down from heaven right next to Jerusalem? Wow, wasn't that impressive? But you'll know the Bible. And you'll know the Bible predicted things like that. So renew our spiritual fuel. And by the way, if they do miracles, but they do not speak according to this word, there is no light in them. And just remember that scripture. Miracles are not the only test. It's also speaking according to this word. Renew our spiritual fuel. Keep our Bible knowledge strong. Believe and follow the Bible, not our eyes, not the media, not society, because everybody's going to be pushed to follow the false Christ. Believe the Bible, believe the Bible, believe the Bible, and stay true to the real Jesus Christ.